Well, we'd like to welcome you back to the Saturn-Earth connection. This is HelloEarth.info, and we're speaking with Michael in Maui, and this is hour 39, and today is the 29th of April. And time to bring Michael on. Aloha, Michael.
Aloha.
Aloha. Well, glad to have you back, and I was just saying that just before we started that just got an email from a woman, and she said, "Oh, thank you so much. I just ordered the Urantia book," and which reminds me, a lot of people have ordered that book since you've introduced it to them. And like Brian in Oregon, he said it's done so much for him and really filled in a lot of holes. And it's a magnificent piece of work. And I talk about the Urantia book to people and ask them, "You ever hear the Urantia book?" And no, never did. And I show it to them, and they're quite fascinated. And I was fascinated, Michael, when you said that Nella was surprised that they told you.
Well, yeah, she had a concern because there are certain things in there that have problems that she didn't think was appropriate because it might have been changed. And we went over that the last time, which was having to do with racism, you know, a type of racism, which the Urantia book pretty much, if you follow it through, it pretty much says that all the races have been a mixed already. And people are finding out right now, is they, as they try to inspect their own genetic background, are finding out that they're related to people halfway around the world. I mean, they never thought they had genes from a particular group of people. How could this be? But according to the Urantia book, it's the world is very mixed already. And whoever tried to pen in the superior race is was very, very wrong in doing that, but ultimately you can just chuck things away. Don't throw the Urantia book away, because Urantia as a text, as a reference and resource, is it's great. You don't need to take it as perfect, reverent, and holy. It is more like a reference or a textbook. And it was meant that way because religions have had their way. However, if we were to synthesize and bring all the religions and boil them down to their essence, they all almost represent the same truth. Some of it not as apparent, but most of it being true. And one of the greatest truths is that we do not perish along with the body, the physical body, but continue on. And this is a very important factor in our development and actually redevelopment maybe on Earth. But presently we are, you know, well on our way to being uplifted to a much higher level, which would be the full adoption, the removal of the quarantine that is on Earth right now, and the welcoming in party, you might say, is beginning with the armada of ships that we were discussing has seemingly begun to increase very much in the way that I received the message of the Armada coming about and making themselves known. And they're doing it in an increasing way. If your feelers out to YouTube and checking out YouTube has been good, as well as other sites, and noticing that there is a lot more going on. Even repeat sightings of a nature that was unique and now is no longer unique, but repeated at other locations in the United States as well as other parts of the world.
Yeah, so, they're really, really making themselves known, because usually in the U.S. news media, there's never been any news about UFOs, and now Larry King talks about it, and there's quite a few news commentaries about UFOs beside the History Channel, and I'm just talking about the news media itself. They usually don't touch on this at all in the U.S.
Right. Local news channels covering their area's news are right on primetime TV.
Which is really uncommon for the U.S. compared to Mexico. Mexico City, it seems like they, ever since, remember 1991 July when the solar eclipse came through the Big Island?
Right.
And it also went through Mexico City?
Right.
Well,
right.
There were lots of people in Mexico City, and I mean with cameras, and since then they have really reported a lot of UFO sightings in Mexico.
Yeah, I remember that day here in Hawaii. It was discouraging because we had fully overcast skies, very gray skies, just clouded over. And I couldn't even see the sun. And it was just,
you couldn't,
it just got dark.
It
that's
just
all.
Got dark.
Yeah. We couldn't even see the sun because we were just a thick blanket of clouds blocking our way.
I remember that was the 11th of July.
Right. So, oh, well.
So you had to fly to Mexico to see it.
Yeah. And that flap of UFOs that was spotted then is in no way the size of what I perceived. The message was very clear that it was going to be a lot more than that. And at lower and multiple altitudes, some as low as 500 or 1,000 feet off the ground, as well as many that are several thousand feet, as well as, you know, much higher, maybe 30,000, where the jet planes fly, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
There's also been sightings from people's windows in the jet planes, you know, their passenger jets. People are spotting them flying around. And the bigger ones, the really big ones, the ones that I saw there that were, was what I questioned, why do you need wings out here? There's no air. For to use wings. But underneath the wings, there were all these portholes. So, not portholes, more like, I guess you'd say holes.
Were those holes for smaller ships to go into?
I don't know.
I
tried to, you know, get an idea. I said, do you, like, go mine atmosphere or some gas or someplace? Do you do that? And this is, in a way, you're right, but that is not exactly what they do with it. So, in a way, those ships are used to transport or carry a lot of things, but the specifics were not given to me. So that's the sad part, you know. I mean, I would like to have known what these huge, huge ships were used for. Just to see them is amazing, because you're in, I know I'm in the New Jerusalem, I'm still within, they're actually taking me on a tour somewhat to portions of it, and that one of the portions was that there was this landing bay area, and you look up and it's thousands of feet of ceiling. I mean, you're looking at a interior space that is immense, and these ships that I presume about, you know, what could easily be a quarter to a half a mile, even a mile, some of them were dimensionally hard to see, except that they were up there, and they were just parked without landing gear or anything, or ropes tethering them down. They just were there. And they were dark gray, grayish color.
You mean floating?
What was that?
You mean they were floating?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they weren't, you know, on the ground with landing gear like we see our passenger jets. No, it was up there.
So they're not like sitting on the tarmac, they're floating above the tarmac.
Yeah, and we were walking under them and going to certain areas where there are a lot of smaller ships. In fact, our shuttle ship that brought me in to the New Jerusalem, that ship was parked in close proximity to those huge ones.
Were they also huge high?
Were
they also very high? In other words, instead of being just wide and long.
They were quite thick.
Quite thick, that's what I thought.
Quite thick, multiple stories thick.
Windows?
Well, no windows, those holes on the bottom. I couldn't figure those things out. Mm-hmm. Unless each one was some type of propulsion projectile area where it would do some kind of propulsion, but I couldn't see that being used because of what I saw there in terms of their propulsion systems were not, rocket propulsion, jet propulsion, type of systems. They were quite different. They have a unique control of movement through the ethereal matter, the space which is not empty space. There's a lot of energy in it, and they traverse it by knowing how to move in motion or in harmony with these forces. And as a result, they can float or hover or move very slowly. And then, of course, they have the ability to move much faster than light itself because some way in which they do probably, I don't know for sure, but probably bend space. Because there was a point, I remember, where they allowed me to view Earth and the Moon regressing or moving away from the Earth and the Moon. And then all of a sudden it just went black. And next thing, in a very short time, when it opened up clear, they pointed out, that's where we're going. And I said, oh, you mean that light bulb thing out there? And it said, light bulb? That's not a light bulb. But then one of them kind of got the idea. And I wasn't talking only with Tan and Nell. There were others in there. And kind of got the idea that I was giving my first impression. And then he understood. Yeah, I guess it would resemble a light bulb that you have on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, these kinds of things are very exciting to remember because they're very clear in my memory. I was trying to remember my day fishing this past weekend, and many of the memories that I have are clearer than this past weekend's fishing trip. So it's very interesting how they place this kind of memory sort of in my mind. They've almost like imprinted it in a strong way.
That's really funny because I'm sitting here listening to you and I'm thinking, well, it's amazing that you can remember this. And I was thinking, well, let me ask Michael about his memory compared to when you were at that time when you went out to the New Jerusalem. How did they bring your memory back and how strong your memory is? And now you're talking about memory, exactly what I was going to ask you.
Yes, there's a little bit of telepathy going on between us right now.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to ask. That's
Yes.
because people would wonder, oh, well, how do you remember this so well? And 5 years ago, what was your memory like about it? And how did it become so clear now?
Yes, because of the timetable. And it's important that the message not be obscured or essentially put on the shelf. Old story. Because you got to remember that this experience of going to the New Jerusalem outpost, or you might call it a mothership, but it's much too large to be a mothership. It's, in fact, orbiting Saturn, which makes it could be a moon of Saturn as far as I'm concerned, because when leaving, they allowed me to look at a moon fairly close up, and I said, "This is not where we came from, is it? It's a moon. I can see a lot of texture on the surface, some cratering and things like that." And they kind of nodded and yeah, getting the idea. In other words, I'm not sure if that object, the luminous object that we, point out many times, is not oftentimes hiding itself near a moon, so that it isn't always seen. But
Or they could not have the lights on. Maybe they turned the lights on when they knew you were coming. They wanted to, turn on all the lights.
yeah, I'm sure that could have been. It was interesting though. They did want me to see it. They're pointing it out. And another thing they pointed out to me on the return trip, when I finally got out, we got outside and we left the New Jerusalem. We are moving away from it. They pointed out a group of these extraterrestrials pointed out to me and said, "About there is where we come from." And he pointed to a star grouping, and I recognized the Orion belt and the sword and stuff like that. And I said, "Oh, that's the Orion constellation." And they said, "Oh," they were happy. He said, "You understand where it is?" And I said, "Yeah, it's around there." And I said, "Oh, that's nice." It seemed so far away, I just couldn't relate it to, here's these guys right next to you. They're humanoid in appearance, they're very friendly, quite loving and tender and very logical in their thought patterns, and yet they can interface with me. And next thing they're telling me whether they want me to know where they come from and what business they have here with us. That wasn't always that clear, but it seems to me it was very friendly in my return trip. I don't feel like I was abducted. I feel like rather I was privileged to be given that trip. And I'm fairly certain that there have been other occasions where I've been taken out and given more information, but not necessarily taken to the New Jerusalem. But there are some very clear indications that the New Jerusalem is a very real and very old station in our solar system.
Yeah, well, again, NASA hasn't called it a moon, hasn't given it a moon name, but they certainly have lots of photographs of it.
Right.
In
And
the
there's some interesting things that have, come about. And there's people who just want to dethrone it too. They simply would rather have it go away. It's better that this is a new discovery, and or if it's too strongly linked with my testimony, which is based on experience. This kind of stuff really should be held in the frightening and terrifying levels of being abducted against your will and taken to the torture chamber by aliens. Such nonsense is probably only accounted for by those people who were not able to communicate the real desires of our heart, the deeper desires. And as a result, some of them, some people, have been treated like a specimen, like an animal, somewhat. And of course, this can be quite dehumanizing, making you feel much less than you really are. It was quite the opposite for me, you know, Curtis. I felt like I'm nobody, and they kept telling me I was not nobody. And I was very wonderfully made and intelligent and well able to understand what was going on. If I spend enough time with them, it would be like just going into a modern building and, you know, knowing how everything works.
You know? Right.
Just find a light switch. I could turn on a light. Just tell me the light switch.
In the beginning of our hours, you spoke about when you were, or when your mother almost miscarried you.
Right.
And and then you spoke about your aunties around the crib, and there weren't only aunties around there.
Well, I would put it into the perspective of having my aunties sort of visiting me, and I had this other group, and this is where I was receiving the answer from Onisea Juan, Nella, of how she knew my name. Mm-hmm. And she let me remember this accounting of the actual happening, how they were surrounded around the crib, and they've made joyous motions, and as well as simply having a wonderful feeling of being loved and cared about, much stronger than my human real aunties, you know, and relatives who would come and see me. I remember that very clearly. And I guess you might say there is something that is going on with us, the human race, the uplifting, the possible intervention in some of my actual genetics. I'm not sure. I have no proof of any of that. However, there was quite a bit of explanations that were given in a very quick sense, you know. Rather than tell me a story, they just actually let me remember these events. Much like how the memories that I have are very sparkling clear in comparison to my own natural memories of events that have happened very recent, like yesterday or this morning.
Well, remembering back to when you were in a crib, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And most people can't remember, you know, they may be able to remember back when they were 3 or 4.
Right.
And, of course, when they're 3 or 4, they're in the walking stage. And when you're in a crib, you're not really in the walking stage.
Well, in a crib, sometimes you're put there. You can sort of walk. And to keep you out of trouble, sometimes you're put in a crib, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But
the terrible twos, generally, twos, maybe three, you might still be in a crib.
Mm-hmm. But it's amazing the memory has come back and how clear it is to you.
Well, it's released, and it was timed that way, I believe. And we don't want to, you know, see this kind of special knowledge destroyed. I have an idea that maybe you'll be putting out a chronicle of these transcripts in book form, where you'll actually be repeating the stories in a much clearer sense than how, you know, you got it transcribed. When you got it transcribed, you keep all, you put in everything, which includes my and my ahs and whatevers, mm-hmm. which actually detracts from the fluid truth that is being, you know, put out there. But that's because I guess you would be getting another book ready one day, maybe.
Well, if people are listening to it, sometimes when you start a sentence, you'll say four words and then you'll repeat the words again. And if I don't do it exactly how you said it, it's really confusing to try and follow, because you get lost real fast.
Yeah.
And then if we ever want to take that text and clean it up, we can take out all those uhs and everything and turn them into sentences easily. So if you're not listening, you can read it. But to...
Yeah. And that's probably the direction that you're headed right now, because I know that being, you know, put together, we've been put together, and your curiosity was all put together, and you have just within this broadcast a certain understanding that as you were formulating questions, I already was ready to answer them or answering them right there. Proving a certain level of telepathic communication going on.
Yes, so, and here you're answering things I haven't even asked you yet.
But you were ready to ask.
I was ready to, and I was just waiting until you took a breath so I could ask you, and then here you're, because that made me laugh.
Yeah. Because that's how it is. I mean, there's a point where, you know, moving my mouth and speaking was such a task, because included in a communique that would be having a dialogue would be not just words, much more than words. And recently, my wife has come forth with saying things like Tan telling her, "I understand. You don't need to explain it. I already understand." In other words, her thought pattern was clear enough, even if she hadn't quite put it into the wording that she felt would be appropriate, you know. And he said things like, "You don't need to go into more detail. I understand exactly what you're saying." And that's the interesting part about opening up. And again, there are times in which similar things happen between my wife and I, where she swears I shouted at her, "Go get this," and she'd come with it, and I'd say, "I didn't say a word." She said, "No, I heard it very clearly." So it's something that we already have working for us. I know there was a question concerning DMT a couple of times, and the pineal gland and the this God gland that we have, mm-hmm. and how it was explained to me that they did something, they did some work, they took away something. And I thought they took the gland away, but they took away the hindrance, whatever that hindrance is, to make it operate a little bit better. And it was very interesting all these years to have it operational. I would find myself strangely finding things going two different directions with people. Some people adored me and really got off to a great start and stayed that way, and other people just right away didn't like the feelings that they were getting from me. So mm-hmm. it's interesting. Some people don't want to know that they are not fully in control of all of their secrets and things like that. And if there's someone who can almost read your mind close to you, it gets a little spooky.
Yes, it would be spooky.
Yeah, I can't really read minds as, you know, as people would say, read minds, but some people felt like I was snooping around in their life in areas that they thought was hidden. But, you know, these are kinds of things that just happen because of the information that can be given to you through various sources, as well as telepathic sources, as the sources of the what would be considered a thought adjuster, or many of the spiritual adjustments, or carrying from the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth, the Spirit of Knowledge. These all coming from God, actually. These are the things that were taught to me in the New Jerusalem, shown to me in the New Jerusalem. And of course, I didn't come out there, away from there with a degree and a diploma, but I was not the same person that went in there. No longer did I declare that God was dead. Rather, if these highly civilized, highly intelligent, highly technical individuals who live relatively simple, they don't have a lot of trappings and junk in their life over there, I didn't seem to see that, had an intense desire to work with God, to work with the first source and center toward the goals that they were busily working toward. And right now we've got this busy activity that seems to be in making themselves clearly visible to this world. And along with that clear visibility, there will be some who will swear that they were talking with these beings that are in some of the ships, and it would be true. It would be true, I would say.
Yeah, well, you know, I encourage people to go to YouTube and type in UFO, and many of those UFOs, you'll see all those comments, oh, this is a fake, this is a fake, this is a fake. And you look at it and you think, wow, that's so strange. That they're not all faked, and I would like to see what a fake looks like.
Well, there's some tricks of...
with a string and...
you know, camera stuff, but that's old hat. Today there's some guys who have done some really nice work in terms of CGI. And the first thing I notice is that having been with different vessels, most of them don't have a real mechanical look to them. They don't look fabricated in the way we can fabricate them. And these, there are some guys who are, you know, making UFO pictures and making the ships look fabricated. And that those are definitely, in my opinion, not from the extraterrestrials, not from the galactic brotherhood there.
Like the one in Haiti? In Haiti?
Yeah, that one looked like CGI work, and,
yes.
And it looked like, well, this guy had an idea of what he wanted, and it ends up looking like something we made.
Yeah, and it shot off like a jet.
Yeah,
it
right.
It banked like a jet, and then
yes.
Or a helicopter.
Right, exactly. And, of course, that stuff is pretty nice to look at. And and you like the guy who ever made it has a nice reward in the sense that so many people get to look at his stuff,
mm-hmm.
You know. And says, wow, you know, look what I did.
Yeah, but then there's all that other stuff that is just so phenomenal and insane.
Yeah, and I especially like the one that it was said that was a problem with light and stuff like that, which was the one that spouting light, that little orb, like... that you've got on the...
Oh, you mean out near Saturn?
Not that one, but you got another one that you got from YouTube, a link to YouTube, and it shows a spouting...
Oh, yes, that's from
UFO
Miami.
That looks exactly like the the shape that is used for heaven in the Buddhist temples in different parts of the world. And it, in fact, even many of them have the shaft of light going up from this bulbous, pear-shaped, somewhat object that they have on the very top of the temples. And it's interesting that the elders, those that seem to have very a very old look to them, they like have a like, most gave me the feeling like their brains were outside of their head, and because the deep furrows in the top of their head, they don't have shiny bald heads. They ended up reminding me strongly of Buddhist monks, you know. And then I found out that there are certain areas in which Buddhist monks are really mimicking them. So there's definitely, in my opinion, been some contact made and some sharing of esoteric knowledge. This esoteric knowledge that I'm sharing is hopefully not going to be esoteric, but just plain knowledge, because that's the level in which I'm trying to express. And the reality of UFOs is what they are coming up with and how they've interfaced with us for a long time. Much like how we, have interfaced with many things in our study of, let's say, animals and things like that. But there's much more than that. They don't consider us that way anyway.
On one of these recordings recently, you mentioned that they were planning on coming and getting all of us.
Oh, yes. There's a real concern that no one get missed. However, the body is not considered, our physical body is not considered a necessity.
Oh, that's interesting.
Excuse me?
That's interesting.
Yes. For what is more important is our who we are, our unique being. That is probably much more important. Have you ever been in care homes when you see the body there, but the person isn't? And it's sort of sad, you know, when they've lost, like, through Alzheimer's or something.
Oh, yes, I know what you mean.
You know, yeah, the body's there, but where's the person? Well, they've got it all in the right order. The person they can save, the body is unimportant. The person can be saved intact. Sometimes memory may not be so intact, but the personality, the person, will remain so intact. And that is very important for them.
So are you saying that when they take all of us off this planet, that they won't be taking all the bodies, but they will be taking everyone?
Yes. They'll be taking everyone.
They'll be taking everyone, but they may leave their body behind? Is that
yes.
What you're saying? Yes?
The bodies may, the bodies that we have and we possess right now may be left behind. Others will have their bodies with them and will serve with their present bodies because of our present ability to continue to procreate and bring many more individuals to conscious reality out of nothing.
Did they say any details as far as how they would bring these people with them when leave their body behind? How that process would happen?
The process is related to those holes under the wings.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. but I don't know the exact method. And what if they need a certain? I don't even know if they need a certain distance from the people or the souls, or they can do it from a very far away. But I suspect they've got to come within a certain distance and have this harvest. It was talked about biblically as well as in a sense of my saying mining operation or harvest. I use the term mining, and this is, in a sense it is true. But what it is truly a harvest of souls so precious that I hope none can be lost.
Well, that's magnificent.
Excuse me?
That's magnificent to hear this.
Oh, yeah.
What is going to be left with the bodies? I mean, let's say they come and they take the beings or the souls.
Right.
And the bodies will be left here, but will the bodies still be functioning? And will it be like they're in two places at once? And I guess the main question is, why are they taking us?
So harvest has been done in other worlds, but not here. It has been held back because of the quarantine. When the quarantine is lifted, the harvest will come. The Bible calls this the resurrection. So the resurrection includes those that have perished from their physical bodies and have not been harvested yet, but have been brought to even right here a waiting place where they are with essentially the harvester, yeah, the God of gods, the Creator Son. As a result, it matches with the resurrection. It also aligns somewhat with the concept of what modern Christians have pointed out in terms of the rapture of the church. The rapture is a concept taught as simply as could be, where the physically alive people whose bodies are, you know, still functioning, in other words, they're just running around, just normal people, will have and undergo a special participative activity in their bodies, much similar to what would be I was prevented from attaining when they pointed out the resurrection chamber or the regeneration chamber, and I looked at it and I said, you know, it looks like
You called it a tanning booth. Once.
Tanning booth, yeah, exactly. But they said, no, this is a regeneration or resurrection chamber. You go in there and you will live forever. He said, oh, you know, and I kept, you know, I passed it going away from it. Says my immediately said, I'd like to jump in there, you know. Then finally, when I went past, again, my thoughts were, why don't I just go over there? And they knew exactly what I was thinking. But then they actually pointed out that when I would go in there, my body, my physical body, would essentially perish in much of the way that it functions in a normal sense. Although, they said, he will need his body. Won't he need his body? as he this one individual that was 10, like a the technician for the booth, you might say, was explaining to my guide there. And he said, oh, yes, he'll need his body. He cannot lose his body. And he says, okay, well, you know, your body will die. Essentially, right. So those who participate with a body that is alive in the sense of our mortal sense, will that body will perish. It will become very different from what it we have right now. And we'll lose those who participate in that part. Will actually lose the ability to procreate. No longer will they be natural bodies.
Now, a moment ago you said when they lift these beings,
yes.
And even leave their bodies behind,
right?
You used the word resurrection. Now, are you referring to possibly bringing people with them that have already perished on this planet?
Oh, yes. I'm referring to that, too.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yes.
So you mean like Elvis?
Like Elvis. Yeah. Essentially, this concept of sleep or waiting, the resurrection, is taught not only in Christian circles, but in that place I went to in Japan, talked about the founder of this esoteric sect of Buddhism, the Shingon sect, as being asleep, awaiting awakening. So this is very much the same thing that is understood. Again, time has no place for those who are asleep. They don't know that time spans has gone by. So, yes, we are looking toward the great harvest, which matches the concept of the awakening of the sleeping ones or the resurrection. And this is where the information that I have and the fact that there is some kind of technological or thing that goes on is amazing, I guess. It revealed to me what could have been only the sense that it was God that did this. But no, it's those who serve God that are functioning in this busy planet right now.
So this huge armada of ships that come here that are going to be 500 or 3,000 or 30,000 feet above the Earth, they're really here just to display themselves in force more than what they're showing now.
Yes, but there will be a harvest of the sleeping ones, as well as some of the living ones. I'm going to say right now there may be a sense that there was a lot that will perish. You're wondering, why would there be a lot that will perish? It's such a sad thing. But we'll be seeing like bodies. But what is really happening is the eternal beings who have prepared that way are going to be able to literally make it off, and it's make it off this planet and continue on. So this is happening that will be shortly, but the human race will not be erased. You know, essentially there are a lot of living people that would just see everything look like a disaster in some areas and notice some things not at all seeming like to change in their locality. And what will happen is there'll be a more and more greater influence once the quarantine is lifted, you might say. And that interaction starts. The adoption process begins.
Speak a little bit more about the quarantine.
The quarantine was an important factor in allowing this planet to move in a direction that was pretty much of its own design, whether right or wrong, many of the choices, and the fact that the Thought Adjuster and the Holy Spirit were bestowed during this quarantine gave light to the fact that there are many, many people in the world who began to tune in to correctness and righteousness, the right choices. And you find out that there are a lot of words that are used for this righteousness. And the Hawaiians call it pono, or to know what is right to do. And this is essentially the power of true lawlessness. In other words, not having an external decree govern your life. You were talking about freedom earlier, Curtis.
Yes.
And it says, why can't we have true freedom? Well, the Thought Adjuster and our ability to become right with the adjuster, or tuned in, or to make our psychic circles, will essentially bring the kind of freedom and ability to express righteousness without the framework of the law, which is never able to bring true correctness to society. During the quarantine, that measure, the ability for people to begin to function in attunement and to make their psychic circles by tuning in and doing what is right, more importantly than obeying governmental laws and bondages because of these laws and rules and things, was mapped out in our lives and watched very carefully. And it was found that we were making good and righteous choices many times on an individual level. And yet, society-wise, governments against governments, countries against countries, and wars, these didn't seem to be functioning. Actually, they were continuously functioning on an individual basis. And the level in which people have fought to keep their level of righteousness, of this ability to truly love in spite of all the hate that's around them, is probably the reason that the quarantine was allowed for a long time to see that develop. And now seeing it develop in spite of having, you know, many imperfect concepts, you know, driving society and driving the imbalance and peace in this world, is beginning to look like it can be lifted, and ultimately the parts that will allow the lift to happen would be first the harvest, and then the disinfecting of the planet, you might say, after the harvest. Because they don't want to lose any of those who have attained. And this is something that is very powerfully done without mistake, without any kind of mistake. It's going to be very accurately done.
Did you explain why they are taking these beings off the planet?
Taking us?
Yes,
some of us.
Taking us. I mean, the Earth, from what we've heard from Riley on their perspective, is the Earth is becoming sick, and it's going to mend the Earth while we're gone, and then bring us back. Is that what they told you also, Michael?
There will be some of that going on, but there's much more that actually will be taking place, because the world that we have, Urantia, is a very special place in that it is a place of great victory over the forces that wanted to create another way of living that was not going to acknowledge the Thought Adjuster, and because of that not acknowledge the Father Creator and not acknowledge the full universe, only a limited being. And that was put away, and essentially has been only left to the legacies that the one Lucifer rebellion left here on planet Earth. And you talk about the legacies that are left in the Illuminati or things like that that seem to be running this planet. Well, they will be unable to run it without enough unified people who function in that way. That's why there will be a harvest of the ones who have made their psychic destiny, trying to make their psychic destiny to whatever level. But those who prefer not to move in that direction, well, may not be harvested yet. They may, in fact, be allowed to witness harsher things come upon their lives. Right now, we're in cycle 24, sunspot cycle 24. There's already been some solar flares. This is very, very early for solar flares. And there's also indications that their sunspot activity is somewhat tumultuous. It's not easily aligned with the past. Smooth movement through the sunspot's normal cycles. The last one, cycle 23, was unique in that it had two peaks. This one we're looking forward to looks as if it will become scorching, and may, in fact, fry some of our electronics and technology, and drop power grids and things like that. And it can cause a lot of problems with our technologies out there. And this is indeed part of a foreseen cycle of events. And it will, of course, be preceded by this flack of sightings of UFOs, these flap, I guess, or flybys of many, 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 many UFOs that are not of this world.
Well, our electric grid is old. Some of it goes back into the 1890s.
Yes.
And very fragile and not been upgraded, and the money's been going to the shareholders, and they're selling more and more air conditioners, and you know what that's going to do this summer. And if we have a scorcher. But I'm sorry to say we are out of time for this hour, and it's, again, getting close to that time of saying aloha till next time. And thank you, Michael, and we'll see you next time.
Okay.
Aloha.
Aloha, bye-bye.
Bye.